Emerson Show on AM 970 KCMD, AM Portland, Oregon. Thank you for coming by. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. It's not up there yet, but Sarah's working on the best thing ever. She's taking this picture of what is alleged to be baby Suri. I think it's really just someone's thumbprint on the camera. But you are correct.
It is not.
So Sarah is opening Microsoft Paint, which is the worst program ever. Microsoft Paint, which makes everything look as though it were a drawing done by a man with no fingers. And she's actually scrolling a crude chalk outline-esque line around the baby. And with a big arrow pointing towards something, and then the label that says head. So you can see supposedly what the baby-shaped object in this photo looks like. So we'll get it. So that'll be posted later on. It's 503-733-2970. Let's see. We got a lot of calls to get through here, and then we have Gary Baumgarten in just a moment. Later on, CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop is going to be here so we can laugh about Robin Williams being in rehab. We'll also do the rock star recap later on. It's the worst song you've ever heard. We got to get to the Weekend Geek, which I believe is another, I believe this week's Weekend Geek, I think it's another installment where they're promoting something, it's some charity event for, homeless people or something, but I think the charity event is like 2 days ago and it's now pointless and you're unable to help them in any way. But we'll play it later. It's 503-733-2970. So we will, if you are on hold, hang on. We will get to you momentarily. Please don't go anywhere. In the meantime, let's quickly grab our good friend, CNN radio correspondent in New York City. The Big Apple. The center of industry. The world of tomorrow. A thing of things. The city that never sleeps. CNN radio correspondent Gary Baumgarten. Hello, Gary. How are you, sir?
Brother Rick, how are you?
What are some other names for New York City? The Big Apple, the city that never sleeps.
Gotham.
Now, I don't want to open this whole thing again. I swear to God, and I can hear the phones being dialed as I say this. I thought Gotham was Chicago. Okay, look, you sons of bitches. I'm just saying. I thought Metropolis was New York.
No.
Are you sure about that?
No.
Ha-ha. Sherrod, you are. All right. Please don't. Fine, call and clarify. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to create a little geek cheat sheet. And that's going to go up here on the wall, and it's going to say, like, Gotham equals, and then, like, Metropolis equals. Because I swear to God, I thought Metropolis and the Daily Planet and all that was New York City, and Gotham was Chicago.
No,
Gotham is also New York City.
But that's just because you're a New Yorker.
No, it is.
And you're like, the New Yorker, like, everything is New York City.
Oh, man, do I have to Google this while we're on the air?
When you are a New Yorker, everything is about New York, isn't it, Gary?
You know, and I used to hate people like me when I was living in Detroit.
Are you from New York?
Detroit.
You're from, born in Detroit.
Uh-huh.
So you're street smart and tough as nails.
Detroit prepares you for anything, I'll tell you that.
So you're from Detroit, Roop is from Chicago. You guys are all from the mean streets of the big cities.
Yep.
And I'm a hick from the middle of nowhere. Well, let's talk about New York City, and it's been a whole day of just weird, crazy, stress-inducing, bizarre news. So, thankfully, Roop will be along later like a cleansing sorbet to take all of this unpleasantness off our tongue by letting us talk about raw sewage. Since Roop is a
stand-up comedian,
yes.
Ask him where the Gotham Comedy Club is located, New York or Chicago?
Okay, but there's a New York pizzeria right here in Portland. That doesn't mean I'm down the street from the Empire State Building.
Ask them where the Gotham magazine is located, New York or Chicago.
Okay, I can sense that I've stepped over some line. And that as a New Yorker now, the next thing is you're going to be flying out here to punch me in the face.
No, never.
Right. Well, let's talk about World Trade Center, which is not the building, but the movie,
yeah.
Which is opening. Now, it's the new Oliver Stone film, and we actually, or Sarah knows somebody who's in it. Sarah's friend Robert, who I've met, who's a local actor,
uh-huh.
is in this movie. They've already screened it in New York. Is it actually playing there yet, or being released?
At least nationally, except in Portland, apparently.
Has it already opened here, Tim? I thought it opened. Is World Trade Center currently playing, or does it come out this week?
I think it's this week.
I think it opens this Friday. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you right now, good movie, bad movie, I don't really know that I'm going to be seeing it, because I think, to use the dreaded cliche, I think it's just too soon for me anyway. And I'm not saying it's going to be traumatizing as such. I'm saying that I don't mean to be making light of 9/11 or to be minimizing that, but more than anything else, I think I'm just still fatigued. You know, the whole thing, just thinking about seeing the World Trade Center movie just kind of makes me tired in a depressed sort of way.
Well, it's interesting because the people who saw the first showing of the film here in New York, I didn't have opportunity to see it yet, but they walked away with kind of mixed emotions. On one hand, it was very emotional, and they said that virtually everybody in the theater was crying. On the other hand, it was very inspirational because it didn't really focus on Osama bin Laden. It didn't focus on the government's ability or inability to stop the attack or what the government did right or did wrong or didn't look at the causes of it, the motivation. All it really looked at was using the example of two Port Authority police officers who were buried and subsequently rescued. It looked at how people, first responders, police officers, firefighters, paramedics, would rush into the jaws of death, quite literally, to save the lives or attempt to save the lives of people they didn't even know, absolute strangers. And it put those that community in such a great light, I am told, that it was something worth seeing.
And so, nobody, of course, in any way doubts, you know, the heroism and the, you know, the intestine. I mean, those, you know, we talk a lot on the show about, you know, what is it, you know, being a, you know, a stand-up guy and being a real man, and what does that mean and what does that entail? And everybody who you know, a guy, look, I can tell you, that word hero gets overused a lot in this world, but some guy who's gonna charge right into a building that's on fire, that's gonna fall down, that's, you see those guys that, there's some burning car somewhere and they gotta go inside and get somebody. I mean, that's more spine than I'll ever be able to have in my life, so I don't think anybody, doubts that.
And stop and think about this. I was told that there's a scene, I don't think you could ruin this film even if you told every part of it. I'm told that there was a scene where, you know, there was these firefighters who approached the building, and they looked to their boss, whether he was a captain, a lieutenant, whatever, and he says, "Okay, fellas, let's go in." And they kind of just looked at one another like, "Oh, my God, this isn't going to be good." And then they went in. Now, would you go in?
No.
You know, would I go in?
No.
I don't think so.
No, I would not.
It really takes a very special person. And I recognize that, you know, these are people who applied for this job. They weren't forced into the job or anything like that, but it's still, if it weren't for them,
that's true,
who would there be to protect us?
So it seemed like Oliver Stone, maybe this is his attempt to make up for, not that he has anything to apologize for, but I mean, he did so many films in a row, Platoon, Born on the 4th of July, Nixon, JFK, where he got labeled a conspiracy theorist and a freak and a liberal nutcase and whatever, and I wonder if this is his attempt to sort of erase or to make over his own image with America and maybe get a little Oscar action while he's at it.
I will tell you this, that when he sent the researchers into town to talk to people who were actually there to get it as accurate as possible, I know people who refused to work with them because it was Oliver Stone.
Right.
They thought that it was going to be exactly that. So, this is a huge departure from what we expect from Stone, and maybe, you know, it's a departure that he will stick with if the success of this movie holds true, because I'm told, and I really do want to see it, that it is just so accurate. The people who I listen to the most are the ones who were there and who survived,
right,
their impressions, and they say it really captured the essence of the event. And just regular New Yorkers, all of whom had gone into the World Trade Center one time or another, talking about how the recreation of, for example, the underground shopping mall that the towers collapsed into, and how it was done with finite detail, exactly as they remembered it in their mind's eye, and how weird it was to see it back, you know, after
restored
5 years.
Well, we just got confirmation that it is playing everywhere, so there you go, World Trade Center. And I will, we're talking to Roop, I don't know, like 20, 25 minutes from now. I will find out definitively the Gotham Metropolis thing, my friend.
Okay.
All right.
Don't believe Gary. Ask Jim.
So I'm saying, as a New York, look, you know how New Yorkers are, even adopted New Yorkers. You know that you've got a vested interest in New York being the coolest place that's ever existed anywhere.
It is my responsibility to you and your audience to bring accurate information every time I join you on your show.
Okay. Is that that sounds like a mission statement hanging on somebody's foyer.
I'm reading it.
Thank you. Gary Baumgartner, my friend, we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Take care, buddy.
All right. CNN radio correspondent Gary Baumgartner in New York City.
I was going to ask him about Lieberman, but I said
no.
That's why I gave you that story. I figured you'd be safe talking about that if you.
Oh yeah, this again. I didn't even get a chance to bring this up. That the Statue of Liberty's crown was going to. It's point going to the top of the Statue of Liberty is stupid anyway. Has anybody here done it?
No,
Sarah.
No.
Statue of Liberty, it's retarded. I don't mean the Statue of Liberty is retarded. I mean that thing where you climb, it's the worst. Everybody tells you not to do it, and then you disregard them because you're like, oh, I gotta do it. It's fantastic. The worst, most pointless tourist experience I have ever had in my life.
It's like going to the top of the Washington Monument on the Mall in the Capitol. The window's about this big.
That's exactly.
It's full of cobwebs.
That's exactly. And then we'll get these calls in like 10 seconds. I did the Statue of Liberty, and everybody told me. Yeah. They warned me. They're like, don't do it. It's stupid. I'm like, what do you know, fool who's been there? You know what you should do? Get on the boat, see Ellis Island, which is one of the most amazing things I have ever seen in my life, is to go through Ellis Island. That will just take your mind apart and put it back together. Not unlike the Holocaust Museum, same thing. It will just take you down to individual atoms and then rebuild you in a whole different way. It really will blow your mind. But watch the Statue of Liberty from the boat as you're going by. That's it. Because I've told this at the Statue of Liberty. You get in at the feet, you walk in by her feet, and then you climb, you walk stairs all the way up, or you could, all the way up into the Statue of Liberty's crown, and the staircase up is a spiral, and the staircase down is a spiral, but of course, there's no room to put them side by side, so they're intertwined like a double helix, like the DNA. Mm-hmm. And so, if you are claustrophobic, you're going to die on the way to the top of the Statue of Liberty. Your head will explode and your heart will stop. And then, yeah, you get to the top, and it's a tiny room, with a window that's about 3 inches by 3 inches, grimed over and covered with crap that you can't see anything of. And then you go like, I wasted 3 hours of my life climbing up inside a giant metal woman. This makes no sense. Well, let's just go through these calls. So if you're on hold, hang tight. We're going to move through them right now. Todd, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. How can I help you, sir?
Hello, Rick. First, I want to congratulate you on Vizzo energy drink. I was at the Portland airport at my normal 6 o'clock in the morning stay. Didn't have any coffee. Went to the store. Hey, Rick talks about this. Let me have some of that. So, got on the plane after drinking that, and, man, I was ready to start my day. That's all I got to say about that.
Yeah. All right, thank you. And what we're going to do now is excerpt that out. And
that's your live read for
today. That's my live read for today. I don't even need to open my own mouth. I'm going to stick that on a CD, and we're going to send that to everyone who's even thought about advertising.
Hey, what flavor did you get?
I got the, I think it's called, what is it? It was cranberry.
Will.
Thing.
Is it Will?
Cranberry grapefruit?
Yes, it's, no, it's a well-being or well or something.
It's Will. It's called Will.
I am drinking that right now.
And I am, okay, I swear to God, this sounds like a commercial. Sarah's drinking it right now, and you know what? During the last break, I just finished mine and tossed the bottle away. That is our favorite flavor. They're all really good, but when it comes to the energy, the Vizzo energy, that's our favorite drink.
And just a reminder, it must be consumed before going through security.
Yeah.
Because of the terrorists.
Remember to leave your will on the leave your don't try to take your will through the security. It's so thank you, sir. I appreciate that. It's a great beverage.
I got one more quick thing here for you.
Yes.
On the airport security there.
Yeah.
I travel probably about 150,000 miles a year on airlines.
Okay.
And I was in Phoenix yesterday flying back from Portland. And flying, it must have been take your daughter to work day or something because my ID and ticket was probably checked by an 8-year-old. And it wasn't like, hey, looking over the shoulder.
Right.
No, she was doing the job. Mom was checking somebody else.
Oh, really? Well, listen to this. You'll find this interesting. I was reading this to Sarah. I just got this email. Subject line of this email. Why I turned your show off today, Rick. Most of the people who work at screeners at U.S. airports are former military veterans with years of experience and intelligence. What branch of the service did you serve in, Rick Emerson? And then he goes on in that vein for like on and on and on for like 3 pages. So he's claiming that it's only, look, and I'm not saying that everybody there is untalented or a boob. I'm just saying I know how America works, and I know that 90% of the people in any job, anywhere, in any industry are nitwits. That's just the law of averages. At work, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
All right. What do you do for a living that you're flying 100K a year?
I am a marketing manager for an electronics company.
Fantastic. Well, sir, are you spreading the word about the program?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
We appreciate it. Thank you for the kind words about Vizzo. We will pass those along, and you keep listening, brother.
All right.
Thank you, Todd. There you go. That's Todd.
Well, what do you know? It's available at PDX.
I forgot to mention that's the fantastic. I didn't even know that's not on the list. It really is great. Do we have any commercials for them coming up today, Sarah?
For
our Oh, really? Okay, I'll save my observations till later. Save my observations till later when you can... we just need to get a ka-ching sound that whenever somebody calls or something like that. We'll get these... we're moving through the calls here very quickly. David, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
I know things are not like they used to be. I'm a former New Yorker, which doesn't mean anything.
Oh, no. Here we go.
No. I think going to the Statue of Liberty is interesting, not for the view, but I think the walk up is interesting. Certainly, if you're claustrophobic, it won't do for you. My point about things aren't like they used to be is that it's not worth waiting 3 hours for it. I agree. I tell people if you're going to go there, go on the stormiest, most rotten day you can possibly find, because then you don't have to wait very long in line.
Well, I'm not even sure. Now, here's a question. Is if the crown of the Statue of Liberty is closed, that's it, right? That's the only thing that staircase leads to, isn't it?
There are crossovers every so often. People who are in trouble can come down.
An armpit observatory.
But I'm saying my question is, when you climb in that ladder that goes up inside the Statue of Liberty, that ladder, the point of that ladder is to get to the crown. So if the crown is closed, like, ergo, there's no... Like, that's it, right? There's the staircase itself is pointless now, right?
I think the construction on the inside is really interesting.
My point is, though, it seems like they probably got the whole thing closed. Like,
no, it's not. The whole thing isn't closed. People go there just to be inside of it, I think. I'm not sure I would do that anymore. Having done it a couple of times, I probably wouldn't again.
Yeah.
Okay. But years ago, you could go to the Statue of Liberty. This is a long time ago. And you didn't have to wait very long online. You wait a half hour and you'd be in.
Why do New Yorkers say wait online?
I don't know. Is that peculiar to New York? What do you say? Wait in line?
It is in line. I'm not. This is not a criticism. I've just noticed.
I'm not responding like it is.
You really are a New Yorker. You're just all spiky and defensive about everything.
No, I didn't think I was being defensive. I was being defensive then, maybe, right?
David.
We're all victims of what we grew up with.
David?
Yes, sir.
Breathe in through your nose. Breathe out through the mouth. Try to calm.
You thought I was being defensive when you mentioned why did we wait in line?
It was just a casual observation. See, the thing, and don't get me wrong, I love New York. It's a fantastic place.
I hate it, but maybe going back to live for it.
Well, but see, that's the same thing with Tom Likas. Likas is from there, hates it, despises it, bags on it all the time. I am from a small hick town, so of course New York is fascinating to me. That's the thing. We're all fascinated with the place that's opposite of where we came from. So, no, I'm just saying, and I mean this in the best possible way, that you really are so great and so New York in so many ways.
But I've
just
been living here for almost 30 years. It should all be gone by now.
Dude, I haven't lived in a small hick town for almost 20 years, and I'm still eating Kraft macaroni and cheese like 5 times a month. You know what I mean?
The only dream I ever had, really, only passion was to get out of New York. And now here I am in a spot where I may have to go back to live there because I... Only place I can get a decent job.
Why would you want to leave New York City? I'm not trying to knock Portland, but New York.
Because it's dirty. It stinks. It's crowded. It was all I knew. I mean, I was, you know, people. There were people who lived in Brooklyn. I never left to go any place except Las Vegas, Atlantic City, Disneyland, and Disney World. They didn't go any place else. They flew an airplane to wherever the hell it is you go to Anaheim at.
Right.
Get back on the plane and come back to New York.
Or they New go York to Anaheim. Okay. Well, David, I tell you what. How did you discover our very fine radio program here?
I used to have a job where I drove around from place to place.
Now, is that you used to have a job where you drove around, or you used to have a job?
Both.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, sir.
Yes.
I
know about the unpleasantness.
Well, it's my friend, the unpleasantness, it will pass, I promise. So enjoy your unemployment, relax, take a deep breath, and, you know, sit on the couch, enjoy some sleeping, and because as soon as you get a job again, you're going to miss the time when you were employed. I mean that.
I know.
All right, David, you spread the word. You call us anytime, my friend.
If I had any friends, I would. Bye.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
There you go. All right, that's David. Jesus.
That's what happens when you're unemployed.
I was just trying to...
You'll find out that you're really friendless.
It's true. I wish that there was a way that I could look through my cell phone and track the last time someone called me. Because, here's a perfect example. When we worked at Entercom, I still got his phone number in here because I can't bear to delete it just because I've got a strange love for the guy. Mm. But we used to work with this guy, Brian Kipe, who was known as the Bling Master.
I remember.
Because that's what he called himself. He called himself King Bling. He gave himself a nickname, King Bling. Mm-hmm. I still have him in here, in my phone right here, just under Bling. I can't bring myself to delete it because I like having a guy named Bling in my contacts. But you know what, man? He was like our biggest fan. Totally. Yo, brother, man, if you ever need anything, I'm with you all the way. Wherever you go, I'll follow you. I'll work with it, man. I never heard from that guy again. When I was unemployed, I was working with Bruce Agler as a former godlike program director, trying to put together a sort of, and we were at one point toying with putting together kind of our own company to sort of do some radio stuff, not just this program, but the, you know, other stuff. Man, like, left a message for Brian Kemp. Hey, Bling Master, it's Rick Emerson. Hey, we're doing that thing. You should call me back. And then like cut to time lapse photography of me sitting and staring at my phone for like a month while tumbleweeds blow through my living room. Just
then the cell phone bill comes in. It's only one page.
Let's get these two more and then we'll break. John, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, what's up?
I was interesting. You should mention your living room because it seems like your living room may be located in somebody else's.
I'm sorry? Hello? Oh. No, that's too bad. We lost that call. All right, let's get one more. Chris, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Because I'm across the street with binoculars looking in right now.
Chris, hello.
Hey, the suicide hotline answers a lot faster than you do.
Thank you. I want to give a little warning here. I'm looking at the screen right here, and here's what it says on the call screening software. Chris has crippled downstairs story.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, he's all excited. Oh, yeah, baby. Okay.
A couple of guys I used to hang out with were tripping.
They had
a couple of girls at their place with them.
Right.
And one of my friends was a cripple. He had cerebral palsy or however you pronounce it.
Cerebral palsy is correct.
Cerebral palsy, yes.
Yeah,
that's we've decided, by the way.
He had a really bad walk.
Hold on, we've decided, by the way, that's going to be that's the air name for Sarah's alter ego is Sarah Bell Palsy. So,
well, that's
go.
What I call my wife. So,
okay, is that only in the heat of the moment? All right. Anyway, so you're with a couple of friends. They're doing drugs, and what?
No, I wasn't there, but I saw the aftermath. I saw what he looked like afterwards.
After what? Now I don't understand what happened here.
They were doing acid.
Okay.
And they had a couple of girls over, and the cripple pulled.
Anyway, you know what? He
gets kicked out by the other guy.
Wrong number.
And the guy's trying to walk down the stairs, and he wasn't going fast enough, so the guy just put a boot to his back and sent him flying.
Oh, my God.
Okay. And we all live happily ever after. Chris, God bless you, sir. You call us anytime.
All right.
Okay. Really, that call was just so inappropriate on so many levels. Mm-hmm.
What's coming up next, Rick? Is it another CNN correspondent?
Picking up on your sarcasm. You know, I like the CNN correspondents
because I believe them too.
You know what the CNN correspondents are, Sarah Dillon? The CNN correspondents are like, they're like when you eat Ben and Jerry's it's that kind of ice cream that's got crap in it. You know, it's not just ice cream, but it's got chunks of stuff.
Oh, like Cherry Garcia.
It's like Cherry Garcia or like the Chubby Hubby, chunks of something. Or when you're eating a salad and you're like, oh, another crouton.
The CNN correspondents are chunks of things?
They're chunks of crap. They are, they're like the croutons in the salad that is the Rick Emerson Show.
Okay, so like in Lucky Charms, are they like the marshmallows?
Exactly. And Tim is a cherry tomato.
Is that good?
Take a break now.
Crazy.
It's 503-733-2970. It's not me talking, baby. It's the Visa. All right. 503-733-2970. Coming up later on, it's the worst song you've ever heard. Top 5 rock and roll screams. And Tim Riley as the Eskimo. You stay there. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970. Solid State Radio. Here's Freddie Mercury. The Rick Emerson radio program. You should file that outfit away for when we do our photos. That's a good look right there, that outfit. Make it one of your many looks.
Okay.
Have you watched Live from Baghdad yet?
No. Yeah. I just finished the first season of Scrubs, actually, this morning.
All right. Now, see, now I can borrow that.
Yeah,
all
I'm
right.
done.
Yeah, see, I'm needing a new... I mean, I'm not needing a new series to watch, because your roommate, Manuel, gave me Deadwood, and I still haven't watched that. I'm still behind. All right, 503-733-2970. Rick, this email says, well, let's before I even reveal this, let's see what the man himself thinks about it. Ladies and gentlemen, CNN radio correspondent, James Roop from Los Angeles. How are you, sir?
I'm well. A very good day to you, sir.
All right. Let me ask you this, James Roop. We were just talking to Gary Baumgarten about this.
Gary Baumgarten?
Yes. Now, the funny thing is, you do Gary Baumgarten. McCarthy does Rodney Dangerfield and Ed Sullivan. Baumgarten does no one. He has no impression of anyone, except for an angry, surly New Yorker.
He doesn't leave much of an impression, either.
No. Okay.
Ah, boom. Thank you.
Thank you. So he suggested we ask you this because there was some. He and I were having a bit of a contretemps, as they say, about this. A little bit of a conflict about this. Let me ask you this: what real life city, in your estimation, is represented by the fictitious city of Gotham?
New York.
See, I thought Gotham was Chicago and Metropolis was New York.
Oh, you know, you may be right.
See, I am right. And the thing
is, you know, you are right. I'll tell you why you're right.
That's why we keep you around.
No, I'll tell you why. It's because it makes sense. Metropolis is New York.
Yes.
It is. And Gotham cannot be Metropolis.
Right, that's what I'm saying. They're two different cities, it seems like.
That's why it's the New York Metropolitans, ergo Mets. Because it's not the New York Goths.
Right, except there really should be a team called the Goths. In a more philosophical sense, my whole thing is that Batman, who is, not to have this old discussion again, but Batman is much darker than Superman, and Gotham is a little darker of a town. It's a creepier town in some ways. It's a little more menacing than Metropolis.
That's Chicago because of all the, you know, the crime, the gangland crime years ago.
Because it's evil.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's
Windy.
See. And so this, we've got many emails. The really embarrassing thing is not that we're having this conversation, but that it's like the millionth time we've had this. It's been explained to me like 1,000 times, and I can never remember it. So what I did, we're going to figure it out. I'm going to print it out, put it on the wall, and then I will never again have to ask what city is represented by what city.
Well, it makes sense, your theory.
That's what I'm saying, but you know what? So many of my theories make sense, and people pay them no heed regardless. Someday, when I am dead and gone in a box, people will appreciate the knowledge that I tried to share with them.
If it weren't for them, the world would have no morons.
I would have no airport security personnel.
Yeah.
I know, it's true. Dude, I already had some guy email in and say he was never going to listen to me again or he'd turn my show off because I had the audacity to suggest that some of the airport security personnel were perhaps not as intelligent as they might ideally be.
I got an example of how right you are, sir.
Bring it on, brother.
Terminal 5 was shut down today. Today.
Right.
Because some guy got through security. Now, wait a minute. Anybody with an IQ above room temperature on a day like today wouldn't know not to take your eyes off of somebody you are moving to a place for further screening.
Yes, it is true.
The TSA agent became distracted.
By a bright, shiny object.
and therefore, the gentleman that she, he, would, I'm not going to say what gender, was the gentleman that this person was escorting to that secondary screening station,
uh-huh,
then took advantage of the distraction and went away. Now, because of that, instead of spending hours hunting for a guy that she couldn't remember what he looked like, they just emptied out the entire terminal, re-screened everybody.
God, and that's doubly stupid because don't they, correct me if I'm wrong, Jim Roop, but do they not have security cameras? Couldn't they go back and go, oh yeah, this is the guy that this is what he looks like right here.
It would have taken them longer to do that than to empty the terminal and rescreen everything.
And it's not like I have any particular hatred for people who are airport screeners. My whole point is there is a thing called Sturgeon's Law. And Sturgeon's Law says, it's like Murphy's Law, but Sturgeon's Law says that 90% of, I believe it was originally applied to music or television, but they said that 90% of people are dumb because 90% of everything is dumb.
Oh, that's true.
That's the law. So it's just the law of averages dictates that, look, I mean, you're standing, as one of our station promos says this, if you're sitting there on a bus or at work or whatever, look to your left, look to your right. Those people are probably dumb. Like 66% of the people in this country are probably idiots.
Yeah, well,
and, you know, there's no reason why the TSA people should be exempt from that claim, so.
Well, you know, it's a job that affords you job security.
Job security and the ability to bully people to enhance your own depleted self-esteem.
Now, who can ask for much more than that? I mean, the pay is icing on that cake.
It's true. It really is true.
You get to wear a cool shirt that says TSA on it.
Well, and the thing is, if somebody wants to, you know, as Jonas Nightingale says in the movie Leap of Faith, says, you know, you give a little man a little power and suddenly he thinks he's powerful. And it's everyone knows there's a lot of people in this world who just enjoy making other people wait or be inconvenienced somehow because it gives them some sense of ego, you know, or whatever. I mean, says the guy with the radio talk show with his own name on it. It's really what it is. It's the same kind of people that, you know, that end up being meter maids. So. Oh. Anyway.
We wouldn't have them if it weren't.
No, that's true. Well, let's talk about Robin Williams. That'll cheer everybody up.
Woo.
Robin Williams, I'm reading now it's been a golden month. First Mel Gibson thing, which I cannot get off of. And I read some article yesterday that they said that it's old and tired and the Mel Gibson story. Man, it doesn't feel that way to me. That Mel Gibson story, I'm still getting like a warm, rosy afterglow from that because it unfolded in so many stages. First he's arrested, then he's resisting arrest, then he's, you know, really drunk, then he's shouting something about Jews. Then he's talking about the breasts of the arresting officer. Then he's canoodling with women beforehand. Then he's in rehab. It was like, it was just the gift that went on and on and on. And now it's Robin Williams, the publicist, it says here, for Robin Williams, says the actor and so-called comedian is seeking treatment for alcoholism. Mm-hmm. Maura Buxbaum.
Buxbaum.
It's like a Harry Potter character. Maura Buxbaum said, Williams found himself drinking again, as though he woke up and suddenly there he was with a double vodka in his hand. Whoa, hold on!
Look what I found.
Jesus God, what happened? How did this happen? Found himself drinking again and has decided to take proactive measures to deal with this for his own well-being and the well-being of his family.
Well, look, he was sober for 20 years.
Right.
Right there tells you, hey, that's cause for a drink right there.
Seriously, let's celebrate. Well, because he was on cocaine for a long time. And maybe he's just trying to mellow out the cocaine rush or something after all this time still.
I don't know. He has a movie out in the theaters now. He's got a couple of more coming out in the fall. He needs this publicity. He needs some press.
And I hate to be such a hard ass about this. I really do. But you know what? To me, and again, I say this as a man who does not have a drinking problem. I say this as a man who's, I do not have alcoholism. It's not a thing I've had to battle. I will say this, though, that it seems like, you know, if you're drinking too much, just don't drink. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just knock it off. I this is just one of those things where, you know, there's some family trying to make it on minimum wage somewhere. Dad's working 70 hours a week on a construction line. Mom's cleaning toilets. The kids are wearing cardboard shoes. And Robin Williams is spending $200,000 to go to rehab because he finds himself drinking a little too much gin.
It's only $22,200 at $740 per day.
I'm sorry. So he's effectively spending twice what a teacher makes in a public school just because he can't put down the booze. You know, just knock it off.
I can tell you from experience, my father was a violent alcoholic, and that's one reason why we lived, since I was 5 years old, in a housing project. He lost two homes of ours.
Yeah.
And I honestly believe, and I know that people say it's a disease and all of this, but I firmly believe it has nothing to do with disease. I believe he could have at any time stopped drinking.
You know, that's it. Look, and I hate to echo at any time anything that has ever been said by Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Because
is she still on the air?
I think she's dead. It causes me, it fills me with a violent...
I want to pull that.
It fills me with a violent retching sensation every time I find myself agreeing with her about anything. But you know what? I hate to sound like an ass about this, but you and I, when it comes to father figures, are very much in the same boat, my friend. Huh. And I will say this: that people will claim that, you know what? Cancer's a disease. Alzheimer's is a disease. Something that's not your choice. Something that you get in the car and go to the store to purchase is not a disease.
Right.
That's just being friggin' weak.
It is a choice to pull out the money to pay for it. It is a choice to pick it up. It is a choice to throw it down your throat. It is a choice to continue to do so until you screw up your family.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't believe this crap where you might not have any control over it because you choose not to have control over it.
No, I'm saying, no, that's something that, you know, a weakness is not the same thing as an illness, in my opinion.
It is not.
So, all right.
I agree, sir.
In lockstep. See, once again, you take firm strides toward becoming my vice president someday, Jim Roop. Someday when this country's on the right path, you will be my vice chancellor.
What I live for.
All right. And we should just note, on the lighter side of things, 30,000 gallons of raw sewage accidentally dumped into the ocean in Southern California thanks to, listen to this, best phrase ever, a mishap at a sewage treatment plant.
Yeah.
There you go. That's another reason to love
SoCal. The guy who was running that particular valve.
Tell me he was drunk.
He's now a TSA agent.
Wait, hold on. That absolutely requires the... wait, hold on. That needs the... And wait for it. There you go. Ed McCarthy approved.
Special Ed.
Jim Roop, enjoy the rest of your day, brother. Don't drink the water.
Never.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. There you go. CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop. Ladies and gentlemen, he's your personal savior. Now back from an exclusive 3-year tour of Europe, Scandinavia, and the subcontinent. It's Tim Riley.
Out the bottom of the coin tower, downtown Portland, Oregon. CBS presents the City Desk Newsbeat. Tim Riley reporting. Now, the president has decided that the skies are not completely safe.
This country is safer than it was prior to 9/11. We've taken a lot of measures to protect the American people. But obviously, we're still not completely safe. Because there are people that still plot.
The government is here to protect you.
Too many OBGYNs aren't able to practice their love with women all across this country.
Thank you, sir.
British Home Secretary John Reid said the alleged plot, although spoiled, posed, quote, a significant and substantial threat to life, unquote.
We should always err on the side of caution, which
Be
is one
afraid.
Of the reasons that we've kept the threat level at its highest and critical level.
We got to start loading in, what's it? We have to start loading in V for Vendetta soundbite here, because it does really seem like we need to go, we need to remind them why they need us. You know, or whatever the hell that guy says. Is that John Hurt?
John Reed.
No.
Oh.
In V for Vendetta. Who's the other place? The Chancellor, isn't that? What's his name?
Oh,
John
I can't
Hurt?
Remember what his name is.
The guy. Well, whatever. Yeah. Hey, the guy with the teeth.
Now we have our own Homeland Security Chief Michael Chertoff. He was asked what security measures have been raised to record levels.
I think it's a recognition of the fact that, particularly at this stage of the arrest and the takedown, there's sufficient uncertainty about whether the British have scooped up everybody.
Okay.
Everyone has everything to fear. Therefore. No beverages. You can't bring contact lens solution in.
Oh, come on.
Your eyeballs are going to be popping out of your head.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Do they have any I'm sorry.
The next step is to make a bomb out of women's breast milk.
That's Tim Riley who suggested that. I am opposed to bomb making out of breast milk.
No hair gel.
Sort of a stringy bomb.
Toothpaste, perfume, suntan lotion. And other items of similar consistency.
So,
or laptop computers, or mobile phones, or iPods.
Are you kidding me? I don't even know if you're joking about this.
Do you think I would lie to the public?
Dan thinks
you would. After years and years and years of building up my reputation?
I
certainly not.
This makes me want to scream.
This
it really does.
This is truthful news.
No, I'm serious
this
now.
Is
but this
is the Ministry of Truth.
Can we just change instead of the city desk and now from the Ministry of Truth? Would you mind?
Absolutely not.
All right, I'm going to have that
done. That's exactly what this is.
Hold on, I'm going to make the note. Make a note, Tim. Give this to Buzz, our production guy. Ministry of Truth.
Mm-hmm.
I keep misspelling it. Ministry. Ministry of Truth.
This is truthful news.
By the way, we're calling that right now. Tim Riley's city desk will now become the Ministry of Truth. Anybody steals that, I will come to your house and I will knock out your teeth with pliers. So here's the thing. This just makes me want to scream. And again, it's that stupid, impotent, pointless rage. Mm-hmm. What are you supposed to, I mean this now seriously. God damn, I wish we had somebody from the, Scotty, you can try, but I know you'll never do it. Now that's not a reflection on you. It's just a reflection on them and the fact that they will probably not come on the air and ever talk about this because they know that they don't need to. Because
we
the
want
to
talk to the Pope about this.
Because they're the government. But I'm serious now. Do they just expect you when you get to the airport to just buy extras of all of this expensive crap when you get to where you're flying to?
If you don't like this, they'll take you behind the screen to make you show them your willy.
Okay. I'm sorry, I can't talk. Tackle out then. All right. I'm sorry. I just
this
have to,
is the world in which we live.
I can't think about it because it makes me angry. I mean, and saying it makes me angry right now is an understatement. Maybe I'll feel better. Maybe I'll grow accepting of our reptilian overlords.
If it makes you feel angry, just raise that flag a little bit higher.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are we interrupting date planning?
No, I don't recognize this
number. Let me answer it.
It's a Homeland Security
okay.
alert.
Is it ringing?
Yes. It's open.
Hello? Hello? Yes? No, they're gone. I don't know what it is.
Was it a woman named Carla?
No, it was like a recording, but then it just ended.
Yeah. I think it's the insurance company. All right.
Yeah, screw them. Yeah.
Maybe it's somebody applying for a job.
Part of the conspiracy. So does that mean that if you're going to the airport, and this is presumably happening at PDX?
It's happening everywhere.
So if you're going to the airport and you have, I mean, Sarah, I hate to use you as an example for this, but I mean, you're a woman, you carry makeup with you, you've got your lipstick, your lip gloss.
I spend a lot of, I'm sorry, I'm vain, whatever.
No,
I spend a lot of money on my lipstick.
What are you going to do? No,
MAC lipsticks are like 14, 15 bucks a pack.
How many dollars, and again, it's not a criticism, it's all women.
Well, we can go through my bag and see how many lipsticks I have.
I was going to ask, how many dollars worth of makeup do you carry in that bag right now? If you had to add up. And you can spare us your comments about how, you know, women should wear less makeup. Not going to happen. I'm the same way with all kinds of crap that I carry. Look, I mean, like, because they're cracking down on cell phones and laptops, right?
That's correct.
I mean, I'm the guy that's got the, not stupid, but I've got the new, like, $300 cell phone on my hip, so
they
I
don't
mean,
want you listening to iPods because you might miss official information.
And because then you won't be obliged to pay, like, $12 a minute, you know, for either their cell phone service or their in-flight movie service. Okay, seriously, that's a lot of makeup. I had no idea. You got to take a photo of that and put that on the website. Are you kidding me?
Yikes.
This is like a Volkswagen full of clowns.
Hang on.
You'll never make your flight.
All right, that is unreal how much makeup is in there.
That's it.
But you can see
cannot believe that.
I guess that would be the selection of a typical woman.
Is that, Sarah, do you suppose you carry more or less than the average woman, or the same?
Oh, more.
I mean, that's a lot.
I don't even know how much.
I mean, there's got to be at least 30 different sort of makeup items there.
Well, she is a young lady who goes out to paint the town red very often.
And herself, apparently. I can't even imagine if you got to the airport and they made you toss that stuff out.
Yeah, I've only pulled over like 6 things and it's over $100.
Now, sons of bitches.
Do they blow this stuff up in one of those bomb disposal units?
They have the robot come and incinerate it out of the Umatilla Air Base. Yeah. I can't even imagine how angry everybody would be if they had to do that.
Well, everyone has to today.
Well, it's, you know,
I've had belt buckles confiscated from those. Know that they probably have somebody who works for eBay there who's just selling
totally.
All of our
I had a salami confiscated pre-2001.
Scotty, just flag that. I had a salami confiscated. Jim Riley, thank you.
This was before 9/11.
I know. I had, you know what, years ago, and I think you and I almost have a similar story here. I don't know what your belt buckle was, but you had the belt buckle shaped like a gun.
Yeah, it was like a little six-shooter pistol that was about, 2 inches wide.
Years ago, I had a belt buckle shaped like brass knuckles, and it was a little tiny novelty-like belt, you know, that they took away from me. So, and that was years ago. So, all right, I know that there's nothing we can do about it, and I know that
it's for your own freedom.
I know that there's no way we can change it. But it's one of those things where you just gotta bitch about it because it's goddamn stupid and pointless.
You put these things in a Liberty barrel.
It's fantastic. We really ought to send Scotty down to the, we should send Scotty down to the airport with the megaphone and just encourage people. Just encourage people
to. You know that Scotty would disappear if that happened.
To cede
right?
their right with the black bag, Creedy,
yeah.
over his head with a, not so funny now, are ya?
See him in Gitmo in one of those orange jumpsuits.
Aaron, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello, Rick. A couple of things. Number one, if you're bringing all that junk with you to the airplane, they do tell you to put it in your bag, your checked baggage, not your carry-on.
Well, what's
you
the can...
Wait, what junk?
What are you talking about?
All of your gels and hair stuff and $600 worth of makeup and all of that.
What is the point of that? What is the point of, if they think it's an incendiary device, what difference does it make? If they really think it's something that's going to blow up the entire plane, why would they be okay with you put? It seems to me.
Because you can't get to it and mix it together to make an incendiary device.
I guess
like you can't tell every woman on this planet, well not everyone, but I mean everyone who has a purse has a lot of stuff in it.
I mean,
what if it's redistributed at random to other passengers?
That's
so that they can't get together and put this together.
And this is my other point, is that it's either dangerous or it's not. If it's not dangerous, they should let you bring it. If it is dangerous, if it's, look, here's the thing. If it was really, truly
Can you get a knife
threat,
on an airplane with your meal anymore?
If it was, no. If it was really, 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 truly dangerous, they wouldn't even let you take it on the plane. That's how you know it. They wouldn't even put it on the plane, period. That's how you know it's not. This is my case with, this is my argument with cell phones for the longest time. You know, there's that stupid goddamn warning they give you when you start the plane. When they start to fly, where they say, and just to remind, ding, just a reminder, all your cell phone devices need to be turned. How, I feel the urge to kill rising, just repeating these words, but they say, all your cell phones need to be turned off as they could interfere with some navigational systems.
That's well, now this will make lipstick explode.
But here's how you know that's a lie. And I don't just mean a little, I mean, here's how you know that that is flat out Bravo Sierra, as G. Gordon Liddy used to say. Here's how you know that's a lie. If the cell phone could really crash the plane, do you think they would let your ass take it on regardless? Do you think they'd let you take it on and just sort of take your word for it that you were going to leave it turned off? The answer is no. They wouldn't, if you, if, that's like giving everybody in the plane veto power over whether you live or die. Well, if he turns his cell phone on, we're all screwed. Let's ask him nicely not to. The reason, the fact that they even let you take the cell phone on the plane is proof that they are lying to you when you say, when they say that it could do something.
You are such a pragmatist.
Yes, I know. Me and my, I do this stupid thing called thinking for myself.
Well, stop it, damn.
Yeah, I know. I'm not a good American, as George Carlin
said. The other thing
say.
Is about Laura.
Yeah, Dr. Laura. Let's be very clear about that. Not my wife. Yes.
Yeah, no, not Laura.
Yes.
Anyway, during some travels in my job, I frequently have hours of unpleasantness where I cannot reach you. So on the AM dial, she is actually spewing her
gibberish.
Intelligence,
yes, nonsense.
Out there, along with G. Gordon and such, out to the farming communities that are out there.
Well,
but she is still out, well, or is a very well recorded, and she's getting rather snippy and short with her callers as of late.
As opposed to the gentle, tolerant Dr. Laura of days past.
Well, she has no tolerance for people that don't know answers like, I don't know why my husband beats the hell out of me.
No, this is every single Dr. Laura call. This is every Dr. Laura call. You know, I forget what her greeting. Does she have a standard greeting? I think she just says hello. You know, like, you know, Jeanette, hello, you're on the Dr. Laura show. Jeanette, hello, you're on the Dr. Laura show. Whatever her greeting is.
That
Jeanette comes
it.
On.
Hi, Dr. Laura. My husband comes home and beats me senseless with a tyrant.
Well, what is it you're doing to cause this, Jeanette? Men don't react for no reason. You must be doing something. What is it you're doing to cause this? That's every Dr. Laura call right there. So.
Actually, now she's encouraging people to go ahead and get divorced for just about everything.
Yes, well,
if you wear the wrong color shirt and your husband doesn't like it, well, leave the man. Yes. Obviously,
or if you've taken a whole bunch of really unpleasant nude photographs as a dumb and slutty younger woman, Dr. Laura. All right, thank
allegedly.
You.
Allegedly,
thank you. No, not allegedly. I've seen them. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. That's Aaron. Steve, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, you know.
Oh yeah, the FAA. They do eBay lots of knives, scissors, all sorts of things. If you do a search on it, I believe the keywords I was using was FAA, airport, scissors.
You know, well, you know what it is. It's exactly, and we all know this is true, whether they deny it or not. For years and years and years and years and years now, we know that when you go to a concert, you know when you go to a concert, they don't take cell phones away anymore. But, you know, when you go to a concert and they take away your camera, they take away a knife, they take away little baggies of whatever out of your pocket, you know that all that stuff either goes home with a security guard or gets sold. You know it, and I know it. We all know it. So,
pretty much, yeah.
No, I'm with you, Steve. All right, thank you, sir.
Bye.
All right, good. That's Steve. By the way, one more final note about this, then we'll break. We'll come back with more Tim Riley at the City Desk because you can never have too much Tim Riley. We're giving you Tim Riley before they take him away, folks, before the government decides that Tim Riley needs to be stowed in a bag somewhere. So we will, we'll come back with Benjamin. Benjamin is something I want to talk about, and Paul as well, so we'll do that here in a moment. My final observation is this, and I will tie this into V for Vendetta. You know, at the end of V for Vendetta, and I'm not spoiling anything, but, well, I guess I am a little bit, but you know, V for Vendetta is that thing where the mass gathering at the
yes.
end. And that's all I'll say about it. If you know the movie, you know what I'm talking about. But at the end, there's that mass gathering, and of course, the implication, the logic there at the end of V for Vendetta is that when enough people in public, and I am not advocating nor urging anything, illegal, that would be wrong. I do not advocate that. Mm. I'm simply saying that it is known that when enough people get sick and tired of being treated like chattel, when people in this country get tired of being treated like sheep, and when everybody gets tired of being treated like a five-year-old as though we have no thoughts or minds of our own, when enough people just stand up and just refuse to obey, then those things stop. If you want absolute proof of that, and this is not proof from a long time ago, this is not proof from a galaxy far, far away, this is proof from here in this city in America in the last 5 years. You all, if you are, I don't know, probably 25 or older, you remember going to rock concerts or concerts of any kind and having your camera taken away, of course having any sound device taken away, and there was a time early on when they would not let you bring, a couple of years ago, when they would not let you bring cell phones into concerts because they could be used to take photographs or they could be used to record, you know, the band's performance. Special mind, I can tell you, not to brag, this cell phone I have now takes unbelievably high quality photographs, it takes unbelievably high quality video, and it takes pretty damn decent sound recordings too for a cell phone. I mean, not, you know, stereo quality, but they're very, very good. They're very high quality. And this is not, I mean, this came right off the shelf at Verizon, you know what I mean? So there was a time when they would not let you bring cell phones into concerts. When is the last time your cell phone was confiscated at a concert? Hasn't happened. Doesn't happen anymore. You know why? Because everybody has a cell phone now, and they know that when everybody finally has something and just decides that they're not going to give it up, they have to stop trying because people won't let them do it. They know that if they tried to take everyone's cell phone away at a concert now, people would revolt. Because there was this time when only like 20% of the population had cell phones. You know, they were for the people who had a lot of money or for business people, salespeople, whatever. And then suddenly, like 2 years later, everyone in America had a cell phone. And once everybody in America had a cell phone, they knew security people knew they were beaten. They knew they couldn't do it. They could stop 20% of the people from doing something. They couldn't stop 90% of the people from doing something. They've never been able to. They never will. So you just remember that. That is today's civics lesson, kids. All right. Take a break. We will come back. Benjamin on the way. Paul on the way. Jim on the way. Tim Riley as the Eskimo. Top five. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970. Solid State Radio.